Okay, the meeting of the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs will come to order. And it is now, I believe, 1:23 p.m. on Tuesday, March 26, 2013. We are in room 106. And members present, we do have myself, co-chair Representative Foster, co-chair Representative Ledoux, Representative Grunberg, Representative Sadler, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Hughes. And let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. If you could all also please turn your cell phones off, as they will complicate the sound system. So today we will be hearing HB 180. It's the Military Youth Academy bill. And here to speak on that, we do have both Representative Tammy Wilson, as well as, I believe, McHugh will also be coming forth. So if you could come to the podium and introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you hearing House Bill 180. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 2. And with me is...
For the record, Mr. Chairman, McHugh Pierre, Deputy Commissioner, DMVA. I also have General Kakis, the Commissioner, and Tom Burton, the Director of the Division, to offer comments at your pleasure.
Great. Thank you.
Otherwise, you see, Mr. Chair, we brought the big guns with us.
You do.
We will want to utilize them.
Thank you.
So with that, I'm just going to go over a little bit about what the bill is about, and then more specifically, I will let my counterpart do the other part of it. The Alaska Military Youth Academy has seen unparalleled success in serving Alaska's at-risk youth, a military-style 24-hour school. The Academy serves only high school dropouts between the ages of 16 and 19. In almost 20 years of operation, the Academy had graduated more than 4,000 cadets. Like any program, the school started out small and has grown to graduating about 300 cadets each year. The funding formula that currently serves the Academy is outdated and must be changed. And for those who don't know, the formula has been seven times the BSA. So that's what we're changing here. It was designed to protect a fledgling program from the budget cuts associated with $9 barrel oil prices. The Academy has weathered the storm, which we're very happy, and proven itself as a successful program that can stand on its own merits. With this proven track record, it is time to move the Academy to a direct appropriation based on the number of cadets that graduated. And with that, I'm going to pass on a little bit more about the bill then.
Thank you very much, Representative Wilson, for your sponsorship and your leadership in this effort. Mr. Chairman, McHugh Pierre, for the record, I'd just like to say that we are supportive of this bill 100%, and we realize that this is the next step necessary to take us to that level of excellence. We're one of the best programs in the country, and I believe we can be the number one. And General Kakis and Director Burton can certainly give you details to emphasize that. But if there's any questions with the bill, I'd be happy to answer those with the sponsor, and we appreciate and urge your quick support.
Okay, thank you. And I think what we'll do here, the order I have here, is that we'll take some public testimony if we have anybody online, as well as testimony from those in the room, and then if anybody has questions for either of you or anybody who testifies, from the committee, we'll do that. So, is there anybody online to testify? Nobody online? Anybody in the room here? And if you could also, for the record, state your name and affiliation. We know who you are, but...
Mr. Chairman, I'm Tom Kakis. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Thank you for having us today.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Tom Burton. I'm the Division Director for the Alaska Military Youth Academy. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Well, as far as starting off the presentation, what I'd like to do is it looks like we've compressed everything down into about a 30-second soundbite. I want to just step back just for a minute and explain a little bit. The Youth Academy reaches about 300 people a year. And at any one point in time, there's probably a little over 3,000 at-risk youths that have dropped out of our school system. So we're very effective at hitting nearly 10% of that target population. In getting out there, we have metrics that show pound for pound, we are probably the best program out there, although it's always argumentative as everyone takes great pride in their particular school or academy in the states that participate in this program. We certainly do measure up among the best. With that track record of success for over 20 years, what we'd like to do is step back now and try to close the gap and the gap being the number of students that come in, the number of students that graduate. And as we continue to put more and more pressure on that, what we're finding is it really does need to look at the funding formula. And it should be driven on our ability to sit in here and articulate the need for a direct appropriation with a results-based objective, and that is to get the most graduates out of that program that we possibly can. Under the current formula, the way it works, folks that may sit long after us or have sat here before us inadvertently or intentionally, if they had a large number of students at start, that was what the driver was. And then you would marry it down and or cull out the number of folks that you could manage. Since Director Burton has taken over the program from me, his objective has been to get the most graduates possible out of that program. And that is where the drive should be. So I'm going to turn this over to Director Burton and let him have some of his input into this process and his direction that he has now established.
Chairman Foster, committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk. I will tell you that one of the things we've tried to do is focus on quality of service to our customers. And that's everybody. That's not just the students, that's the parents, that's the communities, that's the state of Alaska. We believe very strongly we've got a program here that strikes directly into the places in the state that we want to. It helps, it supports directly the Choose Respect campaign. We get a lot of students for many reasons. Only one of them is having trouble academically. We have students that come to us that need a lot of help, need a lot of information, need a lot of education, but most importantly need an opportunity to change their lives. And that's what we provide them. We provide them a way to get back on a track that leads them to a successful future. And that more than anything else is what we want for our children, and that more than anything else is what we want for our communities and our state. With that said, our mission is to improve the situation of the youth of Alaska. We think we do that very well, and I'd be glad to answer any direct questions.
Anybody on the committee have any questions? Representative Hughes and then Representative Sadler.
Yes, thank you, gentlemen, for being here. We really appreciate it, and we applaud the program, and I know of cases where it's really, really helped kids, and I appreciate your work. You mentioned that about 3,000 kids are, I believe, annually are in this at-risk category, and you're capturing about 10% at 300. Would there be potential to grow the program, and would this bill allow for it, and whereas the way it is set currently, it would be difficult to do that, and do you have plans to do so we can reach more than 10%?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, great question. We do have the ability to grow the academy. We want to do it incrementally, smartly. Ultimately, we would have some infrastructure limits, but we are not to the point where that's a problem. Frankly, the camp is about sized correctly. It's unknowable exactly how many students we could provide the right information so they would volunteer to be part of the academy. I will tell you one of the areas that we are very successful is impact on this dropout population. We're at somewhere around 10%, which is probably a factor of 10 higher than any other state. So given the geography of the state, difficulties in recruiting, we're doing very well. But what the upper limit is really untested. We're already testing the upper limit of effectiveness. Whereas other states talk about impact in terms of tenths of a percentage on the dropout population, we're up at about 10%. Now, can we ultimately hope to get 100% of these dropouts to volunteer? I think that's probably too much. But there's a long gray zone, and I believe we can certainly raise it upwards to at least 15%, maybe 20% ultimately.
Follow up?
So we have about 300 out of 3,000 a year. Do you have more than 300 applying and wanting to get in, and are you having to turn some away each year?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, we do not turn anybody away. That's one of the ways that we differ from other programs. Other programs, because of the vast numbers of personnel that are in the dropout category, do screen for success. They try and figure out who is going to be successful, who is not. Our philosophy is we take them all. We try to help them all. We give them everything we possibly can in our 8 core components to include life skills, job skills, academics, physical fitness, all the things that help make a sound body and a sound mind. So we do not turn people away. We do currently have an upper limit, but we typically do not turn people away, and we're able to bring everybody in that wants to come in.
To the chair, if I could also weigh in on that question a little bit. First of all, I just want to get into a little bit about why the National Guard or military entity is dealing with at-risk youth like this. The program over 20 years ago when it started, it was seen as a security risk to this nation to have that many dropouts, to have that many at-risk youth. And with that, DOD, the Department of Defense, put resources towards trying to address the problem. So with that, with us coming in and going through a methodology where we have to articulate what our needs are and what we're trying to do through a direct appropriation, we can allow the communities, the government, the legislature to weigh in also on that emphasis, because we could get more programmed students if we had different programmed recruitment or different emphasis. But all of it costs money, all of it needs to be justified, and it needs to be articulated. So at any given point in time, we would sit here before this body and articulate what our goals and objectives are and get your support and your authorities to provide the right amount of funding to either increase the program, reduce the program, change the program, whatever is needed. But this way, it's not just a formula where it's just on autopilot. Every year, we have to prioritize and then come in and compete those priorities and get your buy-in and your involvement and your feedback into how the program works. So that's another offset of the benefit of this direct appropriation process.
I now do have a follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. The direct appropriation process, as opposed to the autopilot that is now underway, are there any benefits having to do with federal funding that you may be able to access more easily if we were to go with this route as opposed to the way it is set up currently?
Well, I'll start off on that one, and then Tom can fill in. On the current process, we have a zero-sum game. So if we were to go out and receive, solicit, or in some way garner federal support, then that is offset to the state monies, and that has to be turned back in to another division, the school section, the education division department. So usually that's going to be late in the year, hard to execute properly, and it is really it doesn't provide any incentive to go out and seek additional funding because it all zeroes out at the end. So that's problematic. So there's other portions out there under direct appropriation that we can go out, seek additional funding, grants, or other inputs to bolster the program, grow the program, without being basically penalized and having back to a zero sum. So, yes, there are benefits to the direct appropriation. Tom, can you add to that at all?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, I agree 100% with what the general said. For instance, a year and a half ago, not because it led to additional federal funding, but because it was the right thing to do for the state of Alaska, we raised the target graduation rate, and we have been meeting that. Excuse me. That actually led to some increase in federal funds, but as the general indicates, those did not roll through to the academy. They were good for the state of Alaska. It reduced the amount that the state of Alaska put against the program, but it did not result in a net gain to the academy.
Representative Sadler, but before that, I want to recognize Representative Higgins, who has joined us. And just for the record, Representative Foster had to step out for a few minutes, so I, Representative Ledoux, are continuing on with this meeting. So now, Representative Sadler.
All right. I like the tag team. I suppose, Commissioner Kakis, what is the federal funding component of the Military Youth Academy? How much do the feds pay versus how much the state has paid?
In most of the programs, it's usually the proportion is paid for, supported by the federal government, and the state being less. So at 75% to 25% or 80-20, some type of regular proportion where the state doesn't put in as much skin in the game. Alaska, however, is considerably different. It's reversed. So Alaska is currently, Tom, I think 80%? Or is it? I'm referring only just to make sure I got my numbers right. 70%. Is what Alaska puts up to the federal government's roughly 30%. So it's reversed because, again, as a state, we have seen great benefit from this program. We have stepped up as a state body and said we will support that, and the results have been shown. So it is reversed from the other states that are out there.
And I observe that might give this program a little more stability given the federal budget cuts to have the preponderance of your support come from the state. Aren't you concerned about being in a slightly more precarious position funding-wise? The state of Alaska will face its budget challenges as well. And you've addressed it a little bit, but I want to make a very fine point. Aren't you concerned that going from a pretty fixed, firm, reliable formula to facing the same vagaries as every other general funded program faces? Does that give you any pause? Are you pretty confident?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, you know, that's part of the world we live in right now. I don't think that there's any fixed, flat secure way that you're going to have funding, whether it's a funding formula or whether it is a direct appropriation. I think the best way for this program is for the leadership of that program to sit before a body like this and articulate the need and let that prioritize. The funding challenges we're facing today across the nation are significant. And I think with 20 years of experience of this program and the product, it is money well spent. It's a great investment, and I think we can articulate that. And I am no more opposed or at risk personally, my feelings, on a funding formula or direct appropriation, only because we do have a great product that we can articulate.
Thank you. I was told as a young man that the best job security is working your butt off and doing a good job, so I think you're there. Do you anticipate that overall there's some upper end for you, that the program could get more funding than it currently gets under the formula? Is that part of the calculation here?
Through the chair, could I get that question again?
Sure. The question was, is it possible that doing a good job as you are, that you might end up with more support from the state of Alaska than is currently afforded to you under the foundation formula?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think that's entirely possible. We produce quite well. We're always going to be supporting the governor's budget. This is supports many of the governor's programs. This is an area where there's a great deal of synergy that can be garnered by small and incremental investments also. We'd have to be able to articulate that, but clearly there is room for additional investments in this program with big payouts.
Last one. I think I want to put on the record, if it is, saying that I'm a big supporter of the program. I've spoken to your graduates and have a stepson who went through to great effect, and I think it's a great program, money well spent. Thanks.
To the chair, Representative Sadler, thank you very much for those comments.
Any further questions from the committee? Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know. This is kind of a technical question. We are changing the name of the academy officially to the Alaska Military Youth Academy. But if the members would look at the current statute, AS 1430-740, entitled Funding for Alaska Challenge Youth Academy Program, first of all, if we add a subsection C, it's not just going to be a funding, but it actually will involve the establishment and a requirement for the establishment of the academy. And also, it will no longer be known as the Alaska Challenge Youth Academy. It'll be known as the Alaska Military Youth Academy. I'm not sure, I don't recall ever having had to ask this question before. I think, and this is kind of for the staff, when we pass the bill out, there should be some kind of, and this is generic, and I'll, at the appropriate time, make it either as a motion or a letter of intent, that we request that the catch line be amended to reflect what's going on in the bill. And that's just kind of, I assume the department has no objection to us doing that.
We'd have to check with the sponsor of the bill to be absolutely sure on that. But
I will check with the sponsor, who's smiling, I assume that'd be okay. Okay. Secondly, the question is on the effective date. This is a little bit complicated because the statute that's being repealed is, oh, I'm sorry. Strike what I said first, because that whole statute's being repealed. Forget what I've said. I was totally wrong. If it's not anything, that whole statute's going out. The thing that we're dealing with here is this statute is going to be repealed.
Representative Grunberg, what all aren't we supposed to be paying attention to?
The cash line. We don't, because we're not going to have that statute at all. It's going away.
So anything that you've said for the last few minutes, just forget it. Okay.
I apologize.
Just strike
it. I apologize. Par for the course, right? Okay. But seriously, if we are repealing in the middle of the fiscal year this statute and we're putting into effect a different kind of a regime, And we have an effective date of January 1st. And maybe I should ask the sponsor of the bill, Representative Wilson, this question. But is that going to cause any kind of a problem in the continued funding here? I'm not sure if we have to do anything concerning the effective date, and I just don't understand.
For the record, I'm Representative Wilson, but I'm going to let my counterpart answer that question.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, McHugh Pierre again with the MVA. I worked with the sponsor to make sure that we would carefully address the funding transition from one year to the next. And as we discussed what date would be appropriate, we had legal, both legislative legal and our Department of Law, analyze the date. And the January 1st date was an appropriate date because our goal was not to rush into this. As we were discussing how do we best move forward the division, we didn't want to slam something together this year and have you guys go, well, is that the right amount of money? Is it not? And then we shortchanged the program overall. So what we did was we said, this year we will get the funding as normal. So July 1, we will get the BSA formula funding, just like we would last year for the current year that we're in. And then this fall, we will start the budget process like we would for any other division in state government with a general match plan and have a direct appropriation that we will then justify to you next session, which will go into effect July 1, 2014, which would be fiscal year 15.
Yeah, please follow up. That is the crux of my question, because it's one date when the fiscal year begins and the appropriation begins. What you're doing, though, and that would go to June 30th of 2014, but you're switching this in the middle of that fiscal year.
And Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Representative Broomberg, the reason why that's okay, the July or the January 1 instead of a July 1, is because we're getting our money in July of 2013 before that effective date goes into place. So we get our money front-loaded in the fiscal year, and then we'll have our money to execute through the year. So it'll be the next fiscal year that will be impacted by this effective date as written in the bill.
May I please follow up?
Follow up, Greenberg?
Next question. Will this have any effect on your ability to receive federal funds, which I assume is with the federal fiscal year, which starts October the 1st of this next year?
Certainly, through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, that's something else that I worked very closely with the sponsor with. So we will only be open now. We won't be impacted negatively, but we will be impacted positively in that if there is an opportunity to receive additional federal funds, not that I'm saying there will be in a year of sequester, but if there is an opportunity in the future, we can now receive that. As General Cactus and Director Burton spoke to, there are other programs in the country, and traditionally Guard Bureau for the National Guard, all programs, high performers get the leftovers from the low performers. And we're a high performer. And we've been solicited in the past to get the leftovers of the low performers.
I see.
And so now we'll be in a position, a positive position, to receive that money.
Okay. If I may continue.
Representative Gruenberg.
The testimony, and according to some of the documents you presented here, and I'm looking specifically at Mr. Burton's letter of March 22, that the Academy was formed in 1994. AS 1430-740 was not enacted until 2002. What was the statutory framework prior to that, between 94 and 2002?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, it's my understanding that it was a direct appropriation then as well. So it was some type of match program, and the discussions went, that it was a fledgling program, and it didn't have the results to necessarily stand on its own. So the members at that time decided they would create this funding formula to back into a number that was out there. They knew that at that year, based on a $3,000 BSA number, that they had to come up with a formula that would create the back end number they wanted. Well, today, as the environment has changed, as the need has changed, as the sophistication of the division has changed, we need a different formula. We need a direct appropriation. So we should just get rid of the old formula altogether.
May I please follow up?
Follow up.
I'm going somewhere with this, folks, and you'll see in a second. Was there, prior between 94 and 02, was there any statutory authority? Was there a regulation, or was it just kind of an ad hoc deal?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, from my understanding, as I had this budget before, is that we were giving the money to the military academy without the authority, although we probably should not have been, and that's what kind of started putting it into statute, and as they were doing it, they did the seven times part of that. And I want to add just a little bit to that, is that one reason for this change as well is they're doing a wonderful job. As they've been part of the budget for the Department of Education, as they've given money back, anytime you even give money back, you get in the nice big book, which all of a sudden brings you up to the top of what we have to ask what you're doing and all those types of, you know, and they've always, you know, risen with wonderful things that come with it, but it just every year has shown that we really needed to work on the statute and give them appropriations that they truly need versus every year trying to guess with that. But there were, quite my understanding, quite a few years in which, you know, people would just assume that, you know, they had the appropriation part. That's why it's kind of been to the Department of Education, and then it's been a grant straight out to the academy.
With that, if I may, please. So this started out in 94 with no authority on an ad hoc kind of a basis.
We think.
It got this statute for a funding program in 2002, and now it's morphing into Section 2 of the bill, which really will create this program on a permanent basis. I strongly support that. And this is kind of in a rehearsed series of questions that we talked to McHugh about yesterday. Because we really like the program, I think it's time to have it permanently in law. And how would the administration and the sponsor feel about a small but vital amendment? On line 2, page 2, changing the word may in may establish to shall, so it'll be shall establish, and that will give us a permanent youth academy. How would you folks feel with that amendment?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, it is my understanding is that this section was put in there primarily to establish the academy. The academy has already been established. It's actually kind of going backwards and giving the authority. So this has a companion bill, and I know we don't necessarily care about that here, but we've both been looking at it, and we are more comfortable keeping it as may just because we don't know what shall could cause down the line.
Oh. So, okay, because I was concerned, if I may, I was concerned that if we say shall, that would not allow the department unilaterally to do away with this. But if you have may, and you don't have any other legislation, some future administration could abolish the academy.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, they do such an awesome job. I guess I'm not really worried about that because I think they will show the graduation rates the way they are, and they're taking our at-risk youth in a way that no one else has been able to, not even here, but in the lower 48, be able to come to the standards that the academy has done. And so it is my belief that as long as they have those high standards, which I know good and well they will keep, that I can't see any reason why anybody would ever want to do that. But I do understand what you're saying, and I do appreciate that. But I really believe that there are other things that we may not know down the future, and I just, you know, feel that this is probably the appropriate language.
Okay.
Are there further questions of the committee? Seeing none.
Actually, I do. Thank you.
Representative Sadler?
Probably the least important question last, I guess. Why the name change?
For the record, McHugh Pierre again, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sadler, the sponsor and the leadership at DMVA realized that we call it Department of Military, or that we call it Alaska Military Youth Academy. And as we see in statute, the whole part of Section 1 of this bill is to establish that informal name as the formal name across the books. And so as Representative Grunberg brought up earlier on in the committee meeting, our one intent was to clarify that, make it the same across all statutes, and we found that once we repeal, as we do in Section 3, AS 143740, that there was in fact only one other provision in statute that needed to be corrected, and hence Section 1 of the bill. But we know that publicly we call it Alaska Military Youth Academy. We've worked on that, as Director Burton found out, with Senator Ted Stevens, and we respect his influence on the division, and we'd like to continue to keep it that way.
A comment, one more half question. I always thought that the Alaska Challenge NG National Guard was a bit of a stretch, but and I've informally known referred to the program as the Youth Corps. Is that something that you would want to continue using, or do you want to use AMYA as the nomenclature going forward?
Certainly, through the chair, Representative Sadler, we don't want to be confused with Job Corps, and we already are very often confused with Job Corps. So we want to make sure we are separate and distinguished, and the Youth Academy, or the Academy, is separate and distinct from Job Corps.
Good deal. Okay, so AMYA or Youth Academy, it shall henceforth be. Thanks.
Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, then we'll have a follow-up. The amount of funding that this current year that went into the Military Youth Academy, what was that?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, roughly $9.3 million was our total fund amount.
Okay, thank you. And follow-up. So what we will be doing, if this bill passes, that the $9.3 million approximately will be reduced from the Department of Education budget, and then there will be the line item in the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. So I would just like to go on the record in advance when that $9 million or so goes away from the Department of Education, that there's not it's not reflected that we're cutting education. That's just a move to some extent. So I just wanted to make that point.
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, that is my budget. I will be happy to make sure that it's there. And in fact, we will also ask the department to put that into the information that's given, because, like I said, it'll be going in there one more time anyway, that would be reflected so that. You're absolutely right. I appreciate that very much.
And if I might clarify, Mr. Chair, McQPR again for the record, it's not the full 9.3 because it is a match program with National Guard Bureau, but we will see a reduction. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear, that as you look next year and go, where's that 9.3 at, it's not the full 9.3. It's roughly $6 million that education gives over to us.
But we could take it from you. We'll keep that in mind.
I'll be on my best behavior.
Representative Reinbold?
Mine is just a comment. I just, first of all, I want to say thank you, for bringing this forward, and Q, and obviously the general and the director. I have heard a very, very touching story that happened in Juneau, even though the academy is not far from our, and I've had so much wonderful testimony in our community. There's somebody that this transformed someone's life across the street, and it was very, very powerful testimony. And I just want to say you guys are doing a good job, and happy to support this. Thank you.
Great. Other further questions? Representative Higgins.
First, I apologize for coming in late, but other prior commitments kept me from this. When McHugh came to my office and gave his idea that, and the sponsor put this down, you know, my first question was, are you sure? And he says, yes, we are. And he said it pretty adamantly, too. And you know what? That's a fresh breath air for us to have an organization that knows what they're doing and does a good job and says we can stand on our own. It really is. And I hope other people look at your example and does the same thing. You know, merit-based organizations is really an important role, and I appreciate that. And just as Representative Reinbold, I know a couple of youths have gone through your academy and have done well. With it. So it's an important role, and I have no doubt you'll stay funded. So I appreciate it. I just wanted you guys to know that. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I'd just like to say thank you very much for those comments, Representative Higgins, but I have to let you know and the committee know that it's the leadership of General Kakis and the governor that has allowed General Kakis to put together a tremendous team. We've got folks like Director Burton that are running each one of our divisions, and our goal is to be the best in state government, and General Kakis does not let us forget it. And so if I would be remiss to not let you guys know that he holds a high standard, and we're proud to make him proud.
Absolutely.
Great. Any other comments, questions? Representative.
I do have one more, because, and I know you're eager to move this along. I know the committee's eager to move along, but I just hearing about the examples of success, I was wondering before we finish up here, if you could just speak to what's happening with some of these kids. I'm curious how many are going into the military, how many go on to college. Just give us a little expression of what's happening with the graduates.
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, great question. I'd love to talk about this. As a matter of fact, I will tell you that the number that jumps out at me from our most recent graduation, we had 144 young people graduate. They look fantastic. They look fit, healthy. There's a gleam in their eye. I believe 33 of those 144 were going on into the military. We have roughly 100% placement. By placement, what we talk about is either going back to high school and re-energize, going on to college, finding a full-time job, or going into the military. And we have 100% typically that go into one of those categories on the completion. In this most recent class, of course, the quasi-military model wouldn't be the quasi-military model without physical fitness. We literally lost over a ton of weight in this most recent class. We had young people losing 60, 70 pounds, and we've had up close to 100-pound weight loss in a single period of time. And, of course, physical fitness is not the be-all and the end-all, but it is a very real part of a young person's self-esteem. And so that's one of the components of the quasi-military model that is so spectacular. I know that the mother of a young person told me that the last words she heard before he went into the academy was that he hated her. And what kind of a parent was she that he had to go to a place like this? And the first words that she heard from him on graduation was the opposite. How much she...
And with that, too, through the chair, Representative Hughes, is that they don't just drop them back into the community either. They send them with a support team to go with that. They know that, you know, it's one way to change your life going somewhere, but then to be dropped back into kind of those situations that got you there, that they also need the support there. So this is a well-rounded program to where it's not just about that student be there. So, you know, if you're feeling a need to volunteer, I hear they always need them, yeah, mentors within your own area to follow these students. And I've got a couple that still stay in contact with me as they've come down here and gone back to high school, and they've gotten their diploma and they never thought they would. So, you know, it's not just about the academy. It's not just about there. It's also the community that they bring in with us. And you can just see a little passion that comes out with that. And thanks for asking that because, it just shows all the different steps that it takes when you have a student out there at risk, feels nowhere to go, and the parents don't either. And to have something this special in our areas, sometimes we don't hear about it until, you know, maybe it's our own child that's troubled. So it's good to keep that out there. And I just, you know, I'm just amazed to hear all the stories, that, you know, and the wonderful parts that come with that. But thank you.
I don't do well with questions like that.
You did very well.
I want to thank you for asking the question and thank you for answering the question. That helps to put a face on this because we're used to seeing statistics and numbers, but to hear the human side of these things, I think, is the most important thing. So thanks.
And the good statistics.
All right. Are there further questions of the committee? Seeing none, I don't believe we have any amendments.
Could I have a 30-second at ease?
At ease. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Grunberg?
I had an amendment that's been distributed on page 2, line 6 to line 4, to change may to shall. I'm not going to be offering that after talking with the administration and the sponsor. And so please disregard that.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Grunberg. And I believe it, did you have another public testimony?
No, testimony, no.
Okay. Well, with that, I just want to make sure, is there any further testimony, whether it's online or in the audience? Seeing none, public testimony is now closed. And with that, I will entertain a motion. Representative Sadler.
Mr. Chair, I move the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee move House Bill 180 from committee, version 28-LS0684/alpha. With individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
Okay. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion is passed, and we appreciate that very much. So I think with that, our business is done for today, and I believe our next meeting will be at the call of the chair. So thank you very much, everybody, and this meeting is adjourned at 2:03 p.m. Thank you.